Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Lovely. Okay, so everyone, welcome. I'd like to introduce Sarah Ness, our lovely presenter. Sarah is a facilitator, teacher, consultant, and coach, and founder of The Authentic Revolution, which has helped train over 1,000 leaders at this point and found other communities. This presentation is called Mentioning the Elephant in the Room as a Superpower for Connection. So I'll hand it over to Sarah. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone. I notice my heart is beating really fast as I'm here, because I can't see any of you on screen, but I presume you're watching. And this is a talk that I've actually never given before, so I was really excited to brainstorm it when I was invited to speak here. And I actually want to start, since this is an embodiment conference, with a brief meditation. So I want to invite you to close your eyes wherever you are, or find a place where you want to rest them. And notice what's happening in your body. Specifically, anything that might be impacting your experience that maybe you haven't put attention on. Is there a thought that keeps coming up in your mind? And what happens when you notice it? Is there a sensation in your body, maybe soft, maybe loud? How is it changing the way that you sit, the tension or lack thereof, the expression on your face? And you can take another breath into whatever's there. And then if you so wish, open your eyes. Although since I can't see you, if you feel that you would like to meditate through this entire conference and listen, you are more than welcome. One reason I wanted to lead that meditation is this talk is on the elephant in the room, which is the unspoken truth. And there are a million elephants, at least, because elephants are not just what's happening outside of us, they're also what's happening inside. So if you're having a strong sensation and it's affecting how you're showing up, like you're tense, you're maybe, I've had a friend share a wonderful story of walking into a grocery store and all of a sudden starting sweating and just like feeling really anxious and nervous and being like, am I having a panic attack? And then realizing she was still wearing her coat and she was hot. So elephants can be whatever is affecting our experience right now that maybe we're not entirely aware of. So I want to start with a story that I'm sure all of us knows. about the emperor that had no clothes. So I'll tell this briefly. There once was an emperor in a faraway kingdom, and he had a passion for clothing. And one day these two merchants appeared at his door and they said, "King, we have just the thing for you. We have the most wonderful piece of clothing you will ever wear." And the king said, "Great, I'm into it. Come into my castle. We'll give you whatever fabric and tools you want. Just make me this piece of clothes." Okay, so the merchants go inside and they start ordering all the most gorgeous and expensive fabric, cloth of gold, brocade, diamonds, pearls. And they, every day, the king goes in and he looks and, "Are they sewing?" They say, "Yes, yes, we're making your clothes." So finally, it's done. And the king comes in and the merchants are there and they're holding something up in the air. And it looks like there's nothing. The king says, "Well, I don't see anything." "Oh, this garment is so fine that it's invisible." And the king is this true? "Well, maybe it is." And he says, that's fantastic. Amazing. I've never seen anything like it." And they drape the invisible garment around him. And he goes out into the street to show off his new costume. And he's naked. And everyone on the street is staring like, "It's the king. But he's naked, but we shouldn't say anything. It's the king." Until finally a young boy points at him and says, "The emperor has no clothes." And then everybody begins to laugh because the merchants have totally swindled the king. They've taken all of the materials and they've sold them for a wonderful profit and convinced the king that he's wearing nothing. So this is the classic story of the elephant in the room, where something is there and sometimes everybody sees it, but they don't want to say. However, there's a couple other elephants in this story. So for one thing, there's a culture that makes it unacceptable for people to speak up if something is obviously wrong. So what else might be swept under the rug in a culture like that? The fact that the country is being led by a statement innocent enough to be swindled by two merchants, what effect might its believability have on the nation? The trade system that failed to track materials being put in as they were taken out, and of course the fact that the emperor has no clothes. So I define elephants as unspoken truths that affect our experience on emotional, intuitive, or practical level. And you could see elephants as anything unconscious that's happening, really. And one of the reasons that looking at elephants is important is because they tend to hold a group back from its full potential. If, for instance, someone is coming in frustrated and everyone in the room is feeling it in some way, but not comfortable speaking it, it's probably going to affect what's going on. So I'm going to tell a story of an elephant in the room that happened to me, and then we'll talk about some categories that elephants can be in. And then later on, we're going to do some brainstorming about what are different elephants for you, how can you address them, do some troubleshooting of why we don't address these in the first place. So I was leading a training. I do leadership trainings, and I used to, before COVID times, fly all over the US and even the world to teach them. And I had a training in Burlington, Vermont. And I try to keep a relatively even gender balance on my team. So we had two men and two women that were coming together from the Canada and the Burlington and me from Austin, from those communities. And we get into the room and we realize that the gender balance in the circle of people we're teaching for, who are from all sorts of different backgrounds, is 23 women and one man. And we're like, oh God, what do? We can't just not say anything about this, because then it's kind of awkward for him. Like, everyone's aware that there's this dynamic, but also we don't want to point at the guy and go, "You're a man." So, and by the way, this story can apply to whatever. Like, what if someone in the room has a different gender identity? What if one person in the room is disabled? Like, we might not always see the elephants. In this case, it was very visible. So I made up a game that I called Identity Constellations. And on the morning of the training, after the first night of dropping in, I say, okay, what I'd love is for everybody who's aware of a context, of an elephant that's affecting your experience, I want you to say it. And then everyone that is also aware and affected by that is gonna step closer to that person. And if you're not aware of or affected by it, you're gonna step further away. And I don't actually believe the first one was, I'm noticing there's only one man in the room. I think it was actually something about like, I'm noticing that there aren't many people from my place of living here. And that's affecting me. I feel outside. And some people step closer and some people step further away. And we had contexts come up like, I notice I'm older than other people here. I imagine I have a different political orientation. And of course, I notice there's only one man in the room, or one man participant. And that actually led to something really beautiful. Like, in fact, naming that opened up a lot of space where later on there was even some impromptu rituals around like healing around the feminine and the masculine. I am actually curious right now if you can brainstorm a situation in which there's an elephant in a room, maybe even in this room, that nobody's speaking to. And I'm going to talk about a little bit of what different types of elephants there can be. So while I'm talking about this, feel free to think about what's a situation in which there's in your life where there's something that you feel like you can't quite name, like it's not okay to name it. And you can put it in chat if you'd like. So I'm gonna share my screen real quick, or attempt to, just a moment while I figure out what technology is. All right. This probably needs to be larger for people to see it. Okay, hopefully you can see this. Give me a thumbs up if so, facilitators. Great. Okay, so I think that there can be four types of elements. And by the way, I'm basing this on the integral model, if anyone knows that, which has four quadrants. So elephants can be something personal. That can be internal experience. Like for instance, if you had a really bad day, like your kids were shouting in the morning and you're coming into work carrying that, or you're having an anxiety attack, or you know somebody gave you a compliment yesterday and you're feeling really good. So those are personal contexts. Social contexts are actually where I find most interesting because there's a lot of space to play. If you work in a space where there's hierarchy, for instance, whenever I go in and I work with a team, I oftentimes have to pay attention to having the employers and the managers in different groups, or not having people that work directly with each other in the same group, because that's actually going to change the dynamic. And nobody's really going to want to say it, because it could be dangerous to call out hierarchy if, you know, somebody doesn't actually, if it could potentially have an impact on somebody's job. It can also mean who knows who. If people feel like they don't belong, they don't know anyone else in the room, they'll be acting very differently. And it can be demographics. Physical, you know, temperature, light, sound, clothes, physical abilities, things that are in physical space, how our bodies feel, whether there's enough room to move. Oftentimes, like an elephant in the room can be, there's not enough light there to see everybody by, or there's not good enough sound to hear everybody. And that creates frustration that doesn't need to be there. If we name, hey, can you, you know, turn down the heat, for instance. And the last is systemic. And these elephants can be a lot harder to change. So these are often ones that are just really powerful if they get named. Like, okay, you know, we all feel stressed right now, or I'm not sure if all of us do, but I imagine a lot of us are feeling stressed and impacted by the fact that there's a quarantine and a pandemic going on. And in America, we have an election coming and there's lots of intensity around that. So if I come into a room and I name that, it might have an impact on people. Something might relax, or it might become a topic that we can talk about. So these are different types of elephants. And you can think of one or more that are happening for you. And coming back, just a second. Still figuring out how to use this. Okay. So to name some common elements. Oh, and I love those of you who are posting in chat right now. The elephant in the room is some countries' response to COVID. Being asked to set up a retreat center by an organization made of mostly older people. The pandemic has provided new room for personal and professional growth while others are suffering. The fact that y'all can't hear me because I'm talking too low. These are all contexts. Issues with intimacy. Yeah. So beautiful. I think you're getting it. So I'm going to name a couple common elephants that you might notice. Nobody wants to be there. You're running a workshop or an event and people were told to be there, or a meeting, and they have to be there. That's a major elephant. And one of the ways to cut that can be to say, how many of you are here because you were told to be or asked to be? And even saying that, right, it decreases the tension in the room in a way. People have different motivations or backgrounds. My common example for this is I am going out with someone and I think it's coffee and they think it's a date. You have this big awkward elephant in the room, and until we clear it up, we're both going to be quite uncomfortable. There's conflict in the room or different opinions, but nobody's speaking up because they're scared of bringing that conflict forward and then not knowing how to address it. When we address elephants, it releases a lot of energy. And harnessing that energy can be really powerful for a group, or it can be destructive. And I think most of us feel that. Someone is speaking for way too long or is even speaking on the wrong topic. This is a super common one, especially in the age of Zoom, where one person speaking, like now, can dominate a whole room, right? If you don't like what I'm saying, the elephant in the room is that I'm being boring and you're on screen listening to me for an hour, right? If that's happening, please post it in chat. I'd love to know that elephant. And then another one is if people don't trust the leaders or trust the hierarchy, even if you're leading an event in the room, for instance, and people are actually, you haven't enrolled them enough, for instance, you haven't told enough about your background, you haven't checked in, they haven't gotten their voices in the room, you haven't proven that you understand their experience. And then you get this kind of crunchy, weird feeling and you're like, what is going on? That's often how you know an elephant, by the way, is by the feeling. Oh, everyone's quieter than they should be. Oh, I feel like anxious in this room. I feel frustrated and I don't know why. Like feelings that don't make sense often point to an elephant. So I want to go a little bit now into why is it hard to talk about elephants? If we see them, right? And by the way, it can be hard to see, so maybe we'll talk about that in a moment. But if you do see them, what might happen if you say it? Think about maybe the situation you came up with or another. What would happen if you spoke that thing? You can put them in chat. Oh, this is a great one from Kevin. We have many systemic elephants in Thailand. One is the new king enthroned a few years ago. He lives in Germany and is allegedly holed up despite being in his 50s with many women. But no one says anything as criticizing the monarchy is 15 years in jail. That's a good reason to not speak an elephant. It's often a question that revolutionaries encounter, right? Is like, do I speak up and risk being thrown in jail or risk being persecuted in order to speak for freedom in the hope that enough people speaking up about the elephant will have it addressed? You might get reprimanded. People might get defensive or offended. You might get ostracized or isolated from a group. You have to say it in the right way or the momentum of not speaking it would be turned on you. Teja, that's a great comment. One of the things that happens with elephants is they sit there for a long time, big and in the middle of the room. And the longer people get used to moving around them, the harder they are to speak because our dynamics start including the elephant. And so when you talk about it, the dynamics have to change. And inertia is a super powerful force. This is one that I think often keeps people in relationships they don't want to be in anymore, by the way. Making people upset, having somebody say, I resent your question, or maybe that is an elephant. Yeah, so all of these things, right? To speak an elephant is not always a good thing. And it sometimes comes with consequence. And it's something that has to really be thought through. Like, are you ready for that consequence? Is it worthwhile enough to you? Things to think about, are you invested enough in the relationship for this? Oftentimes in my field of authentic relating, people start getting into it and then they're like, well, I have to be authentic with everyone or I'm a bad authentic relator. And they go around and not only do they offend everybody by speaking their authentic truth all the time and kind of throwing it at people, but they also speak a lot of elephants that maybe they shouldn't and assume that they have to be authentic in every relationship and they have to process every conflict. And it takes a lot of time. When I was first leading community, I spent probably at least 30% of my time processing conflicts between other people, between me and other people. And you know what? When I stopped doing that, the number of conflicts went down. Doesn't always happen. But if you're not invested in a relationship, it might not be worth the time to process an elephant. Especially if it's like an interpersonal one or a personal one. You also have to choose if you're going to speak about an elephant if it has some of these social consequences. Now, one of the reasons I'm doing this workshop is because oftentimes we think that the impact of speaking an elephant is going to be worse than it is. And there are some ways to speak an elephant with attunement and even check if the elephant is welcome first, that can actually create a really good outcome for it and end up with basically a lot more freedom in places that you've been really stuck because elephants, like the way I think about it is like if everything is energy, maybe not everything, but in this case, using the metaphor of energy, if I've got energy towards something, like say I really want to get a project done, but a friend keeps calling me for help all the time. And I don't want to not help her, but I also need to get that project done. And the energy of these two things are pushing against each other, and so I'm blocked. And I don't want to tell the friend, hey, I'm kind of busy, because they need me, right? Like, who are they going to go to if I say that? And that's the elephant in the room, of course, is you're leaning on me a little bit too much. But it's socially unacceptable to say that. Could hurt her feelings. She might not have somewhere else to go. And all of that energy, all of my energy towards the project, and all of her energy towards me is causing like a blockage in the system. So if we take that blockage out, a lot of energy is freed, which can be either positive or negative. So how do you know what elephants to address? Great question. Let me think about that for a second. I address an elephant if it is blocking connection with somebody that I care about and I'm invested in the relationship. If it is something that is going to sustain for a long time and be affecting me, even if it's small, I try to think about if this elephant is still here a year from now, how am I going to feel? Do I want that situation? Is it important enough to consider changing? So we're looking at really the effects of how you want the future to be when you're thinking about whether or not you want to change an elephant. And you also, on a systemic level, might be thinking about how do you want the world to be a year from now? Like an elephant in the room is that our environment is dying. And it's really scary to speak up about that because when it's spoken, then all of a sudden the fear of it is present. But when it's not spoken, we don't end up doing anything about it. So if I speak that and then I look at, well, a year down the road, what do I want to have done? Do I want to have addressed this in some way? How do I want to be as a person, basically? What person am I living into as well? What view of myself? Then I can decide whether I want to do something about this elephant or not. And the same goes for elephants that are internal. Like elephants can be patterns that you know you're playing out again and again. And sometimes they're not actually worth resolving. Just because something is there doesn't mean that you have to. There's a great metaphor that I love using that I got from the Center for Applied Rationality of the idea of load-bearing bugs. So they consider bugs to be things that are in your code that you don't want there, things you're doing repetitively that are not moving you forward. But it's also like, you know, the scene in the video game where you destroy the boss and all of a sudden the temple falls down. You can destroy these bugs and end up having your temple fall down. And this usually doesn't kill you, but it can be really uncomfortable for a while. So some elephants, even seeing them can be like that, or addressing them. So, you know, you can decide whether or not you want to address these things. Okay. I would love to do a little exercise with all of you that we're going to do asynchronously. I would like you to come up with an elephant situation of your own, maybe a new one than the one you've been thinking of so far. Could be personal, social, physical, systemic. What feels like it can't or shouldn't be spoken? And remember, there can be, and I guess I didn't explicate this, there can be two types of elephants, the one we see and don't know how to speak, and the ones we feel but don't know how to see. So if you're going for a felt one, consider, like, just take a moment to consider, like, what could that feeling be telling me? What are personal factors that could be leading to it? What are social factors? What are physical factors? Space? What are systemic factors? And likely there's going to be more than one. So I'm going to give you a couple seconds to brainstorm. I'm going to put this in chat just so everyone has it. You can put it in chat or you can just have it in your mind. And I'm going to take the excuse to have a drink. And once you have that situation, do a little bit of brainstorming. What would happen, do you think, if you spoke it? And once you have one possibility, I want you to think of at least two others. What else might happen? What are other possibilities? I'm going to read out a couple of these that are coming up and then we'll go on to the next step. And I'm reading things, by the way, so that folks that are listening to this later on will be able to understand what's going on between us as well. From Kevin, on a personal level, one thing we never talk about is my wife's debt, where it comes from, and how it was accrued, because a tie can never lose face. If I push too hard, she could leave rather than own up. Beautiful. So you're also doing the next step, which is, or sorry, the next step is what would happen if you don't speak it. So we know what might happen if you do, what might happen if you don't. So I'm going to read some of these while you brainstorm. The intensity of disconnection during COVID, if it was spoken, people wouldn't care. So that's a really interesting one, right? I'm curious about what the other perspectives are, right? Like, you might speak it and nobody might care. You might speak it and someone else might go, "I'm so glad that you spoke that. I'm feeling really disconnected too." You might speak it and half the group might go, "Why did you say that?" And half the group might go, "I'm so glad you said that." right? We're basing our perception of the reaction to elephants on what has happened before. And we're basing it often on a very small case sample. Another, I'm worried that someone close to me is more right-wing than I realize, but do I really want to know? I'm afraid this might change everything if I spoke it. I might not be able to continue the relationship. We might be able, or other options, very nice. We might be able to discuss the roots of our beliefs, or we might become closer and not have the elephant in the room. So these are all options. Or people might leave. So really quickly, just to say again, the pieces of this, come up with an elephant, what feels like it can't or shouldn't be spoken, what would happen if you spoke it, what are other possibilities, and what might happen if you don't speak it? What's the impact down the road? And this is kind of the is it worth it step. And I'm going to give you another example from my own life. And this is where I did not name the elephant in the room, and I definitely should have, or probably should have. So I was leading a workshop once, and this was one of the first workshops I ever got to lead for a company. I had a friend who had trained as a facilitator, and he had an engineering firm, and he asked if I would lead a communication workshop for his firm. And I said, sure, I guess. Yeah, like I'll do it. I'll figure out how to do it. So first things first, this workshop is happening from midnight to 2 a.m. because it's mostly with people in an Asian time zone. So that's the first thing. Second thing is it's happening on a piece of technology that I don't know. It's happening on an Adobe product. This was before Zoom was a thing, or it was still in its infancy. It was maybe like 5 years ago. And that product ended up not working. So we were all on a call together instead. I couldn't see anybody's faces. And then it turned out on the call that everybody had incredibly thick accents and I couldn't understand a word they were saying. So like, imagine the worst possible facilitation situation that you can possibly think of. And you've got this. And by the way, I'm like 22 at this point. So I felt so self-conscious and so much pressure and so stuck that I didn't name it. I tried to continue on with the workshop as normal, but every time I asked a question, every time I tried to get a scenario for these guys, I couldn't understand what they said. But I didn't want to say that. And so I kept kind of like trying to figure it out and trying to like ask more and not understanding again. What eventually happened is they had one English speaking person, or English as a first language speaking person, who luckily was also very good at teaching communication skills. So he basically like started winging me very heavily and saved the day with all of this. But if I had been able to say, I just want to stop for a moment. I really want to do this workshop well. I know you're giving me your time. So I want to request that we stop for a minute, that we find a platform that we can have this on that's actually going to work, because I'm not going to be able to deliver something on this platform. So even if we're just on a document together, let's find a way of having this discussion that's really going to get us to the goal that we want. And by the way, in naming an elephant, one of the best ways to do it is to set context for why you're naming that elephant. And we'll talk more about this in a moment, about steps to naming the elephant. But setting context is like step zero in a way. Why does it matter to name this elephant? Why does it matter to the relationship? Why should they care? Why does it matter to the goal that you mutually have? You know, for one person, talking about his wife's debt and not being able to talk about that. Like, why? What's a reason why it might be beneficial to your wife to talk about it? Well, maybe she feels that elephant too, and it's also affecting her. So what if you come and instead of you saying, hey, like, we really need to talk about your debt, it's, Hey, I notice there's something that I imagine is creating tension for both of us, and it really feels like something that's not okay to talk about. And I'm scared that if I talk about it, I'm going to lose relationship with you. And I really want to feel clear and connected in our relationship. That's the intention that you're setting. Is it okay if I talk about it? So you're getting permission about it as well. So setting context about the relationship. Oh, and I love this. So actually, Kevin is saying we made an agreement that she would go back to work to at least attempt to pay the debt back, and in return, I don't ask. See, that's beautiful. It sounds like you were able to speak to it and then from there come to an arrangement. That's great. I love that, like, the story kind of already had a next step. Okay. So I'm going to talk a little more now about what you can do if you notice an elephant in the room. And I'm going to hope that I can make my presentation work again. I'm new to this whole presenting thing. Usually I just facilitate workshops and people talk with each other. Okay, so addressing the elephant, notice a name. And then check and connect. And between notice and name should really come set context, which I just talked about. So first is noticing. And this is the piece where, how the elephant may be even invisible or may be hard to speak to. Like, what actually is that thing? Why am I feeling that way? Why is everybody acting so weird? What is your felt sense of how the group is together? I love asking myself the question, we seem like, how do we seem together? Right now, we seem quiet, except for me. We seem to be from all different locations all over. I even like doing this as like at the start of an event, or working with a group that I work with often. I might say, hey, can we just take a minute? And I'm gonna put like a minute or two on the clock, and we're just gonna answer the sentence stem, we seem. For that minute or two, just get a bunch of responses that can unearth what's there. What are people noticing? Because many people are pretty intuitive about this. The second is, what social dynamics do you see? Some things that you can notice is, what is the balance of speaking? There's a really great study by Google called Project Aristotle, where they looked at what formed the most effective groups. And there were two things that worked above all else, above the level of experience, above how long the team had been working together, who the star players were, whatever. One was how good people were at reading each other's emotional cues. And the second was, is there a relatively equal speaking time of people in the group? So if people aren't speaking a relatively equal amount, it can sometimes point to an elephant in the room. Now, I don't know if this is true everywhere because I've been in groups where some people are quieter, but over time, ideally, the balance of speaking time is kind of evening out. So if you're not noticing that, try to figure out what's happening. Are there people that don't feel totally comfortable to speak? Are there people that take longer to come up with their thoughts, and therefore you have to create more time between shares? Or ask somebody to pass the ball to someone else to share rather than waiting for those who raise their hand. You can artificially create this as well, right? Who's in the in-group and who isn't? Belonging is huge in how much groups can work together. Because if people feel like they don't belong, they often don't take as much part in the group. Because why would you take full part in a group that you feel like you don't belong to? Quick story on this. I was once, so in the facilitator trainings that I used to do when we were live, I used to have an almost 1-to-1 ratio of staff to participants because I noticed that oftentimes my community was most bonded when people had a way to come back to connect and serve. So I'd invite anyone who had already graduated back to staff, and usually we had something like 20 participants and like 24 staff. It was great. And I was thinking one time about how to help the staff bond with each other. We were doing the kind of staff meeting night the night before we started the training. And I noticed that I noticed that not everyone was speaking, that people seemed a little tense, that they were sitting further away from each other than I would have expected in a really touch-centered community. I was like, oh, there's an elephant in the room here. And I'd been just reading a book on belonging. And so I was like, I wonder if it has to do with how much people feel like they belong. Oh yeah, if people didn't feel like they belonged, they'd probably be like a little bit further away from each other. So I asked the group, I said, how many people here feel like you don't belong in this group? And about 3/4 of them raised their hand. Now, this was a group, many of whom had been facilitating in our community for several years at this point. And they were the ones raising their hands. And I raised my hand too, because I literally felt like that. And I said, okay, the group of us who feel like we don't belong is kind of a group, right? Like there's more of us. So we're the in-group of feeling like we don't belong. And if you can spend this weekend just assuming that you belong, just trying on that perspective and making it your job to make others feel like they belong, I think we could have a really amazing training. And at the end of the training, the staff lead said that the staff group felt like everyone had their hand on a Ouija board. Like things were just going without anyone having to speak to each other. So noticing in-group and out-group can be a really amazing thing for speaking the elephant. And then last is, what topics or phrases come up multiple times? What do people keep saying? What keeps like coming back around, even though you think you've already talked about that topic, or somebody keeps bringing it up and bringing it up? I'm sure many of you have been in relationships at some point where somebody keeps bringing up the same topic. Oftentimes the elephant is that they haven't felt fully heard and seen in it. It's been acknowledged, but they haven't really gotten that you get it. So there's lots of other things you can notice, but that's a start. Second is, name it. I'm noticing that not everybody has spoken, and I'd love to make room for the quieter voices to speak. So next time I ask a question, I'm just going to give a minute, just give a couple seconds of silence. And those of you who take a little longer to speak up, I want to invite you to speak when you feel ready. So I'm noticing. And you could even notice and then just leave it there, right? I'm noticing that we all seem to be sitting a little far apart from each other. And I'm curious about that. I don't have to do anything about it. I can just, notice it. It seems like this is happening. I imagine some of you might be thinking or feeling or wondering what I'm going to say next, wondering what's happening in the room, wondering like when this quarantine is going to end. And you'll notice that a lot of these are framed as subjective. People respond better when you own that this is your perspective. You are seeing an elephant. It's entirely possible you'll name an elephant and nobody will share that experience. That you'll say, I feel really anxious in this room and I'm wondering what's going on. And everybody looks at you as kind of like, and then you're like, oh, I'm feeling anxious. Well, that's still fine. It's your elephant. It's affecting the room. Or some people, oftentimes what's more common is some people will be experiencing it and some people aren't. And often that means there are two elephants in the room. And the fact that those elephants in the room aren't getting talked about is an elephant in itself. Again, with the speaking thing, oftentimes there are people that are faster processors and slower processors, and that's not getting spoken. And so people are kind of getting tense over time because they never get a chance to speak because the faster processors are always speaking first. The fact that that's happening can be spoken to. Next is check. Once you've named something, you want to give an energy forward. You want to give a next step. Just kind of dropping a bomb, like, I noticed that you haven't resolved your debt, makes someone feel really uncomfortable, right? They're like, oh shit, like, well, what do they mean by that? Like, what, are they angry at me? Like, do I have to pay that back right now? So checking, and the next one we're going to go into, which is potentially change it, are kind of when you give somebody a way forward. And you could check, does anyone else notice what I'm talking about? Or do you have a different sense of what might be going on? What's your experience? Do you share this? Do you like have something else you want to say on it? And also, do we want to address this now or address it later? Or at all, really? And then do you want to change it? You don't have to. like I said, you can kind of leave it there. And it's really good that it's good also to like share what impact the elephant is having on you, especially if you're not going to directly follow up on it, to make space for other people to share about that as well. So you could explore the dynamic further, like I did in the example of my training where I created a game to have people say it. Another way that I'll do that is like an elephant in the room in my trainings recently has often been that some people use non-standard gender pronouns. I have to wait and see if I've like, have I used the right word for this? Some people use non-standard gender pronouns and other people have a really strong reaction to non-standard gender pronouns. I had this happen recently in an international training where some people were from communities in which it was anathema to not speak your gender pronouns, and others were from communities in which gender pronouns weren't a thing, and they felt like speaking them was a sign of like a liberal agenda that now they were going to be forced to do all sorts of things, and it was, you know, kind of leading, it was a slippery slope. So that was a big elephant in the room. One way I often address that, by the way, is when we go around at the beginning, I say, is there anything that you want us to know to help you feel more part of this group? And that's, you know, like gender pronouns, like physical abilities, like something you, you know, feel like you're going to be uncomfortable if everyone like doesn't know it about you. So you can create little structures to explore these dynamics or to create a space where they can be spoken to. You can shift something. Sometimes a group's getting really agitated, especially on Zoom, try taking a break. Hey, for 5 minutes, I'm gonna put on some music. You can turn off your screen. We're just gonna have a dance party or go get a glass of water or go move your body. Like even right now, if you're feeling stiff, like on this call, if you're feeling stiff, if you're feeling overwhelmed with information, like take a second, stretch, beat on your head a little bit to clear your brain out. I don't know if anyone else does this, but I do. It changes the dynamic, right? Even really small things. People learn better when they experience change regularly, regardless of what the change is. And then the last, of course, is to let it be, because even naming it sometimes can be enough. Just a second. Getting my notes back.
We just have a few more minutes, Sarah, and then we just have to summarize a few bits and then can go back to questions if anyone has any, if that's okay, just so you know.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, I'm pretty much done actually. And so I'd love to do a Q&A, but give me just a second to check if there's anything else that I wanted to speak to. Nope, it's almost 11 p.m. here and my brain is a little bit dead. That's my elephant. So I was going to tell another story and I can't remember it clearly enough. So let's go to Q&A.
Okay, lovely. Thanks so much, Sarah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. I've facilitated groups before and I think I've definitely missed the boat on not acknowledging the things that are feeling uncomfortable and reflecting on it after. But yeah, what would it be like to do it live and just see what's happening? So yeah, thank you. Really interesting talk. So thanks everyone for joining us. We just have, what do we have? So yeah, we're on the Leadership and Business channel. So thanks to Michelle Boulay for sponsoring this channel. If you like this presentation and you want access to it for future reflections and digestion, you can purchase the conference. During the conference, it will be 50% off, but you can purchase it after the conference as well. The links are in the chat. If you want to join a coffee break session, this is where you can talk to other participants. So it's more like a Zoom meeting, so it's more dynamic and you can have the chats. You can do that. You can find that in the link in the chat as well. And then we've also posted Sarah's website. So if you want to find out more about her work, and contact. So I think that's everything. So I'll bring it back to Sarah. So if you have any more questions, put in the Q&A or the chat and we can get going. We've got 10 minutes. So yeah, thanks so much.
Open for questions if folks have any. I'm seeing one in the Q&A. Ah, Pauline. I was seeing yours in the chat, so I'm glad you asked that. So Pauline's question is, if someone is consistently talking over others and taking up too much space at a meeting, what would you do? First thing, the answer differs if I'm the manager or I'm just a member at the meeting. How much power I have influences how I might respond. I never want to take over the power without asking for it first. So if I'm just a member at the meeting, I might say, I want to pause for just a second. I'm wondering if I can check in on a dynamic I'm noticing. I really want to hear the voices. I really want to hear from, and it could even help if you point at somebody whose voice would be relevant here. And I just want to like give a little bit of space for them to share. And you could even do that multiple times, for instance. So you're basically creating space, but you're also asking for it first. Another thing that you could do with that, like if you're the manager, one thing I really like to do is throw somebody a ball. You can even do this remotely through a screen. Like, I'm going to throw my invisible ball to Marianne. She's going to catch it. It might change size. It might change shape. It might have a sound to it. And then she's going to answer the question. I do this in check-ins a lot. That's when I do the sound and shape. But, you know, if you just want to get an answer to a question, you might throw the ball and then you ask that person to throw it to someone else. So that's how you might change a dynamic. And the last thing I do is you can take them aside one-on-one. It's often really hard to call people out in groups because there's a big social stigma to being called out. And so just take them aside and go, hey, like, I notice you have a lot of views in the meetings and I love hearing them and I'm really missing hearing some of the other voices. I'm curious, like, what is important to you about speaking out in the way you are? So getting curious, really, not saying, you could say like, I wish that you'd leave more space, but you're probably going to get a better reception if you explore like what is important to them about speaking in that way. What opinions do they really want to have shared? How can you support them in making sure that the things that are most important to them get said? That's just some of the ways. Actually, I'm going to give one more because this is my absolute favorite. And I got this from partially from neurolinguistic programming, and there's also variants of it in a couple other styles. But the leader was talking about someone in a group who was constantly talking over others and constantly bringing objections. And so he stops at one point and he looks at this man and he says, I notice that you're really good at seeing places that we might be able to improve. And I want to give you the role of checking us to make sure that we've checked all of the things that we might need in order to improve. So like, are you willing to take on that role? And the guy says yes. And then the next time somebody starts speaking and sharing an opinion and the guy, you know, jumps in and says, hey, I don't think this will work because the host goes, shh, wait a second. You haven't given him enough rope for him to hang himself yet. Like, let him finish his opinion and then you can point out, you know, you can play your role. So giving people a name, acknowledging what they're bringing, and then finding a shift to it is a really great way to play with this. Shannon had a question. Do you ever have a group reflection or discussion after naming an elephant in regards to whether it was a good or bad idea to do so? I have this often in my relationships, actually. I'm going to give an edgy example, actually. So I had a point a bit ago in quarantine where my partner started gaining some weight. And the one kind of prejudice I have in relationship is fitness, because it kind of keeps me sane and I like being able to work out with my partners and it's what I feel attracted to. And I had this like, do I speak to this or not? Because he's really self-conscious about his body already. But if I don't speak to it, it's going to be like so loud in my awareness all the time. And I also don't want to be disconnected because of it. And checking for the future, if I don't speak to it now, a year from now, do I want to still not be able to name that thing? And I did not name it cleanly. I did name it. I didn't name it cleanly. Really good teaching moment for me. Don't name things when you're drunk. Lessens your boundaries. Also, usually you don't set very clear context. And we actually had a discussion. He felt very hurt. It took us several weeks to actually clear it up. And now it's something that can be talked about in our relationship. But like Shannon, to your question, we actually had to go back afterwards and talk a couple of times, like, what was the impact of me bringing that? How could I have brought it? Like what he actually said was like, it's not that you brought it, it's the way that you brought it. That it was kind of like dropped on me, and it was dropped on me at a sensitive time. So like, if you'd given more context as to why you were bringing this, what the impact on you was, then I could have heard it better. So actually having those conversations helped me understand more about him and helped me have conversations in the future. And ultimately the result of me having named it, despite a couple weeks of feeling really uncomfortable, is that like, he now knows that this is a preference for me. And oftentimes now we have like regimens of working out together, and that's brought a lot of joy to me. Any other questions?
There is another question there, but actually one thing, if I can ask, if you can answer it after this, if you can also give us one embodied tip. For us, we're asking all our presenters, Sarah, what would it be to be more embodied?
In terms of naming the elephant or in general?
In general, for you.
Oh, okay. I don't see the other question, by the way. I'm only seeing two. Could you name it for me?
Sorry, there was yet something in the chat. There was someone asking, do you notice anything different working with high school age students? And what tools do you recommend for supporting them with belonging to encourage working together or sharing in the digital space?
I don't usually work with high school age students. And so even though I've heard some tips from other teachers, I don't want to speak to that because it's outside of my realm of awareness. I am doing a facilitation training that's launching next month. And one of our teachers works with high school and younger age students. And he gives a bunch of examples of what you do with that. So that's on my website. That's not folks I've worked with much. Okay, and embodied tip, best tip for being embodied. For me, it's honestly the way that I most end up being embodied is when I'm going into my head and I notice that it's having an impact on others, that we're like staying in context, that people are trying to problem solve when there's obviously tension in the room, that someone looks uncomfortable, that someone's been vulnerable and we haven't acknowledged it and they're shutting down. That's often one of the moments where I most realize that I need to go to my body and actually feel and respond from feeling. And I do this a lot. I mostly live in my head, and my team has actually become really adept at calling me out. So the other way I stay embodied is keeping people around me who call me into embodiment when I'm living in the wonderful world of my mind. And touch. Those are the big ones for me.
Amazing. Thank you so much. We're coming up to just 3 o'clock, or sorry, this is my time. We're coming up to the hour now. So thank you so much again, Sarah. Really beautiful presentation, and thanks for everyone being engaged and the chat being active. That was really great as well. Please enjoy the rest of the conference.